Hey, this is the Padded Room. I am Darian. I have been Darian for quite some time, and I'll continue to do so. What's going on, peoples? I'm a little caffeinated today. I don't know if you can tell or not. I'm on like my sixth cup of coffee, so this might be a quick show, but you're still going to get all the usual content. You may just have to slow this down a little bit to understand what the hell I'm saying. I'm okay. I'm fine. I'll be fine. Probably going to have the squirts later because that's what coffee does to me. Not that you asked about that, but I believe in being honest here in the Padded Room, and therefore I will confirm all details, biological and otherwise. What's going on with you people this week? Anything cool? I got some big news to break here. Little nervous about this, but I guess I'll just come out and say it. I have been asked to speak at the local Comic-Con here in Reno. Now this, I'm not too worried. I mean, public speaking isn't a big deal to me. I've done that. I've taught classes, I've delivered eulogies, I've done things of that nature. That's not the big deal. There's two things about this that frightens me, and they both scare the shit out of me. First and foremost, they approached me. I didn't approach them. To be honest with you, I wasn't even aware that there was a local Comic-Con here in Reno. But they came to me, and what that tells me is that I guess somebody out there is actually listening to this here show. I'm okay with that. It just, every week when I come in here and turn the microphones on, I really feel like I'm just talking to five or six of my close friends. Being all the people that write in and correspond with me on a regular basis. This came from someone that I didn't know listened to the show. So, I mean, it's cool. Apparently he thinks I have the wherewithal to pull this off. And I'm not saying that he's accurate in that. But I shall do my best not to make an ass out of him or myself. Probably going to happen anyway. Now, the second part about this that frightens me is not the public speaking aspect, but this local Comic-Con is actually kind of a big deal. Let me run you down a little laundry list of some of the names in attendance. One Bruce Campbell, one Norman Reedus, one William Shatner, a few other notable D-listers, so that's exciting. The one thing that I have never done is had to public speak in front of celebrities or people that I'm kind of starstruck by. So I'm going to tell you right now, kids, if I'm up there doing my bit and I see somebody walk in whom I recognize, I just might poop my pants. I just might take a fat dump right in my shorts and then probably run around in circles shouting the N-word in perpetuity until somebody tackles me. I don't know how I'm gonna handle that. They actually approached me about this like a couple, 3-4 weeks ago. I didn't say anything because I was pretty sure it was going to fall through. But like I thought for sure they would find somebody else that is more qualified to pull this off. But no, it's going to be me. I'm doing panel. It's going to be me. Multiple mics. And then part of the cast from Evil Dead the Musical. Now, I'm very excited about that last part. The first two, take them or leave. So, I'm doing that next Sunday. That's exciting. I'm still going to put a show out next Sunday. I'm doing that Sunday morning, so I'll probably have either some good news or some bad news to report on next week's show, depending on how big of a shit I take up on stage and who notices the shit I take up on stage. That's happening, man. That's going down. Can you believe that shit? No, me neither. Does that mean that I've officially arrived here in the horror community? I don't know. I don't feel like it. I don't feel any different. Like I said, the scariest part of that is that somebody out there is actually listening to this show now, and I can't hide from that anymore. I actually, maybe I should start taking this a little more seriously. I don't know. What if I did the padded room 5 days a week? What do you think of that? Would you get tired of it? I probably would. I'd probably lose my voice at some point. To be honest with you, I probably do more talking in this hour and change that I do on the podcast than I do the entire rest of the week. I'm not normally this outgoing, but I have had 6 cups of coffee, so there's that. I'm going to try to sneak my wife in there and maybe get the audio from it and maybe throw that out there as a little bonus episode. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that legally, but, you know. What are you going to do? Tell me to not do that? Then I won't do it. I'll probably do it anyway. Maybe I can sneak my iPhone in there and just hit record before I take the stage. Assuming that I actually go through with it. There's a good chance that I may chicken out completely. And just stand everybody up. I can't do that. That, you know, that's the main reason why I agreed to do this. Is because it terrifies me. That's, you know, that's a motivator for me. If I'm afraid of something, well, then I have to do it. Just as I'm kind of a little peckish about this thing, well, now I got to do it. And I'm actually meeting with the organizers and the Evil Dead the Musical people later on this evening to hash out the details. To be honest with you, I have no idea what I'm going to be talking about. That's okay, though, because I rarely have an idea of what I'm going to be talking about on this show. I assume it's somewhat horror-related, and the good news, of course, is that I can wax poetic about horror movies till, you know, the cows come home, or whatever cliche you want to throw in there. So, I got that going for me, and that's gonna happen, dude. I'm gonna be taking the stage at Comic-Con, and hopefully not sucking my own dick, but there's a good chance that I will. Either way, I'll keep you informed, and that's going to happen, whether I like it or not at this point. All right, enough about me and my horse shit. Let's, what do you say, you got some horror news here? Let's do that. Let's do a little horror news. I'm excited for... Should I go on about this? I am nervous about this. But at the same time, I think that, well, here's the deal, dude. I'll be honest with you. And I know I'm getting a little blowhardy here, but just fucking bear with me, all right? Started this podcast about 3 years ago, had me and 3 of my close friends involved. Now, most of you guys have been with me through a good chunk of that, and you've seen people come and go, and segments come and go, and, you know, the various, you know, little fucking things that we do from time to time. We've seen that go down. The one thing that I have remained constant about is that any doors that open for me because of this podcast, I'm gonna go through. Any opportunities that come my way because of this podcast, I'm gonna take. I don't care what they are. If somebody invites me to their house to do the podcast from their living room, assuming they're willing to kick down some gas money, I'll probably do it. I don't care. So that's where I'm at. That's why I'm doing this. That's another reason why I'm doing this. And yeah, so there's that. Here's some horror news.
Horror news.
Oh, got some big news this week, kids. I'm sure you've already heard about this, but I'm going to run you through it anyway. The Starz Network has announced Evil Dead the Series to be debuting in 2015, next year. This one is going to be directed by Sam Raimi and will be starring Bruce Campbell. Are you ready for that shit? I am. I'm excited. Starz, that's a pay cable network, premium channel, so there's a good chance we're going to get all the gore and the boobs, and maybe some sexual innuendo, all the stuff we've come to expect from the Evil Dead franchise. I'm psyched for it. I'm looking forward to some tree rape. I gotta wonder if... How much of the... I'm kind of nervous that it might turn out like that Dusk Till Dawn series, which was basically just 15 episodes of the first movie. You know what I mean? I don't think it'll go that route because of... I mean, if Bruce Campbell's going to star in it, then you have to assume he's reviving the character of Ash. I don't know, man. I'm excited for it either way. I will definitely check that out. I'm sure you guys will also. What else we got here? Prisoners. Have you seen that one? Me neither. Sounds like a good show, though. The writer of Prisoners, Aaron Guzikowski, is writing the Universal Wolfman reboot. Now, here's the thing, man. I'll get more into it in What Are You Looking At, but I did happen to catch Dracula Untold. Good. I thought it was a good fucking show. A lot of people are pissed off because it's not really a horror movie. I pose this question to you, my friends. Dracula, Wolfman, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Mummy, Frankenstein, all the original Universal monsters. How do you make those guys scary again? You know what I mean? They've been pretty much drugged through the mud since their inception in the early 30s. How do you make them scary again? We already know all the stories, you know. The creature swipes the dude's girlfriend. Frankenstein jacks the little girl. Dracula falls in love, but then the fucking boyfriend gets involved. We know the stories. So how you would make that frightening again after, what, 80 years? I don't know. But Dracula Untold, pretty good show. More of an action-adventure type of a situation. I dug it, but I'll get more into that later. The problem I have is this. A lot of people, especially dickish writers on Bloody Disgusting, are already slamming this whole project. Well, again, what the fuck do you want? You can't really reinvigorate this franchise with some kind of a terrifying component because they're just not fucking scary. They were in their inception back in the 1930s, but a lot of things have changed since then. So, how are you going to bring these characters back and really garner any interest in them at all? I think they did a good job with Dracula Untold. We'll get more into that in a What Are You Looking At, but the way that they're, from what I read, I've done some research on this, what they have going is kind of like a brain pool. So you have, what, 5 movies, and then they're all going to culminate into some Avengers-style, you know, catalyst. All the writers from all the movies are working with each other and kind of interweaving a congruent storyline. If you saw Dracula Untold, you probably already know what I'm talking about. But I'm excited for it. I'm excited for the whole fucking thing. I'm going to check them all out and probably get them on Blu-ray. What else we got here? The Conjuring 2 is to hit theaters on June 10th, 2016. Now, we already saw the spinoff of The Conjuring, Annabelle the Doll. This one, from what I read, is going to follow the Warrens. And the two main people there, Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, have already been re-signed to reprise their roles. Don't know if James Wan's going to be involved in this or not, but I certainly hope so. I like The Conjuring. Haven't gotten around to Annabelle the Doll yet, but I've heard some mixed reviews. So, I'll check it out one way or the other. What else we got here? The USA Network orders a supernatural drama entitled Evil Men. Now, this one sounds like it's loosely based on a movie called Frailty, written and directed by Bill Paxton. Frailty is a pretty good show. Basically, what you have with this Evil Men situation is a regular suburban-type dad who gets a message from some forlorn entity that he needs to go and start systematically murdering off evil men in his city or wherever he's at. So it kind of gets like a serial killer approach to it because you don't know if he's been manipulated or if these dudes are really evil or what the fucking deal is with that. But I don't know, man. What was the last decent show that the USA Network put out besides wrestling? What, Silk Stockings? I think, I don't know. To be honest, I can't remember any decent shows that have been on the USA Network. So, I don't know, maybe I check it out, maybe I won't. Don't really care. Lastly, IFC Midnight has acquired the rights to Ejecta. E-J-E-C-T-A, Ejecta. It's an alien invasion horror film from the creators of Exit Humanity. Previews are already up on Bloody Disgusting if you want to check those out. Looks like a good show. Looks more Men in Black type of a thing where, you know, people are being rounded up by the government and interrogated. So, and then maybe there's aliens, maybe there's not. I don't know. I mean, IFC Midnight, right? They usually put out some good stuff, so I'll probably check that shit out. Ejecta. Sounds like a James Bond thing, right? Driving in the car. Ejecta! Pow! Out you go. Very cool. That's all I got on the horror news, man. Let's move it right into some listener mail. Incidentally, you assholes, I did Horrorcopia last night, and Alan came clean about last week's Leprechaun debacle. So go right ahead and fuck yourselves. Oh, you silly, silly men and women.
Listener mail.
Very cool. We got a few things going on. Let's start it off with the old emails. Coming in first, Kevin, the main man in Tokyo, Japan. Subject line, 3 years of padded room. I know, man. Can you believe that? So I've been doing this for 3 years now. I can count on one hand the number of weeks that I've had to miss. I guess that's an accomplishment, right? Next week is going to be episode 150. Don't really have anything special planned, but I don't know. I got to do that Comic-Con thing, so maybe I can round somebody up and drag them back to my house. I don't know that I'd want anybody, from Comic-Con in my home or knowing where I live just for, you know, I mean, looking around the padded room here, I have some very expensive fan memorabilia items, and I don't want them getting lost or anybody running off of them. Not that I'm saying they would, but whatever. All right, back to Kevin. Hey, Darian. 3 years of padded room. Awesome, dude. Congratulations. The movie sounds cool. Look forward to checking it out when it's ready. Regarding last week's match results, there's a little song that goes like, "We are the champions, my friend. Go." Hashtag Team Leprechaun. Yeah. Yeah, Kevin, whatever you say, dude. Wolfman versus Frankenstein. Actually, Frankenstein isn't dead. He's brought back to life, made out of different people's body parts, but with the mind of an mind obtained from a criminal. Though Frankie is a big guy, the Wolfman has claws and teeth, and that would take him down. Vote goes to Wolfman. You got it, Kevin. Werewolf pack versus the Cenobites. No contest. The Cenobites bring the pain. Vote goes to the Cenobites. I have to agree with you on that one. Kevin, at Lonely Bob. Every week I say AKA Lonely Bob. He's actually putting out his Twitter handle. If you want to follow Kevin on Twitter, it's at Lonely Bob. He does a lot of tweeting pictures of different food. Mostly sushi. Always makes me hungry. And other things of that nature. So there you go. Don't follow Kevin if you're on a diet. Who's up next here? Oh, it's old Crack House Matt. Subject line, Operation Shitbox. You may recall last week, Matt had some problems with somebody stealing his fucking mail. Probably already got his identity stolen as well. Happy Sunday, gents. All this week, my mail has seemed lighter than normal, so I got to thinking that my mail being stolen wasn't a one-time incident, but rather a systematic daily theft. I decided to move forward with Operation Shipbox. I placed a rather nasty note inside a small Amazon box I had inside of my garage, and along with it, some fresh dog shit in a Ziploc baggie that I collected that morning from Corgi. What kind of a dog is a Corgi? I think that's a little dog, Matt. You got a little dog, do you? Get out of here. The dog seemed a little too eager to oblige. Anyway, so I set the trap on Thursday and placed the ship box in my mailbox and proceeded to wait. The mail thief did not strike Thursday or Friday, but I did receive my normal amount of mail on those days. So I'm not sure if someone is stealing my mail or not, or maybe just took off the latter part of the week. All I have successfully done so far is made my mailbox smell like dog shit. And while I feel bad for the postal worker, I feel I need to continue Operation Shipbox through at least the first half of next week to see for sure. What do you think? Well, I mean, really, Matt, what are you going to accomplish with Operation Shitbox? You got a nasty note in there, and you got some dog poo. Okay. So these guys that are stealing your mail, they're going to get poo on their hands and read your nasty note. Here's the problem I have with that, dude. They know where you live. You know what I'm saying? So you leave the shit bag in the mailbox. It gets jacked. You wake up the next morning. You probably got dog poop all over your car or something to that effect. You know what I mean? By all means, get juvenile with it. But what you really want to do is work on getting the license plate number so you can alert the authorities. You know what I mean? If somebody's fucking with the mail, that's a federal offense. Last I checked, that carried probably, depending on, you know, who they are and if they have priors and stuff. But you're looking at least a year, you know, upstate if you're going that route. Plus, man, if they're jacking mail, they've got some unscrupulous, you know, ideas. And who knows what they're capable of. I say, I think you were going to set up a camera or something. Let's work on getting that license plate and possibly catching them in the act. Save the dog poop for the neighbor that doesn't clean up after their dog or something. I don't know. On the werewolf front, still working out all week in the mornings, but this last week was crazy busy and only got 2 gym days in. My diet could be better, as constant stress and frustration doesn't make me want to pick up a salad, but hopefully this coming week will be a little bit less crazy and I'll get back to my 4 to 5 gym days and right the ship, so to speak. I have been doing mostly elliptical cardio and not much running, as my knee had been recovering from an... oh boy. I lay out a... some kind of an injury. Apparently, that is the second most common running injury after a sprained ankle. While it doesn't hurt to walk normally, the side of the knee hurts like the dickens when I try to descend stairs or stand up after a long period of sitting. Also, when I ran, it would get more and more painful every time I made impact with the treadmill. Apparently, the only way to heal is just some time and putting ice on it every now and then and stretching it. I've given it a couple weeks now, and everything feels pretty good, so I'm going to get back to running this week and see how I do. I just never feel like I've gotten in a good cardio workout when I am on the elliptical, even though I ramp up to level 8 or 9 and do about 6 to 7 miles on it. Yeah, I feel the same way, Matt. I mean, I've tried the elliptical. I don't know what that is. That it's supposed to be great for you, right? What do? You get on there and then you get the arms going too? Is that how you're rocking it? I can't. I feel like a fucking asshole. And I feel like a soccer mom or something when I do it. Dude, I just run. I think I may have the same injury that you do, because my knee kind of hurts on the side there from time to time. Usually it's gone by the time I get to the next run though. So, I don't know. Terradome this week. Going to go with the Wolfman over Frankenstein. Uh-oh, Jesse. Speed over size, and I'm going to take the Cenobites over the Wolf Pack. Well, shit. By the way, don't blame multiple mics for spilling the beans about the super secret project. If anyone hadn't figured out what it was you were doing by now, they'd have to be at the same level of stupid as those who give their phones to hot chicks with porno pages still up. Hey, fuck off, Matt. Anyway, that's all I got this week. Crackhouse Matt out. Yeah, I mean, what do you get? I should just change the name of this podcast to... we should just quit with the horror movies and just do a separate podcast, The Ill-Advised and Often Embarrassing Adventures of Darian. That's what it should be. But thanks for writing in, Matt. That's good times. Who's up next here? Crease. Hey, it's the Crease Barrage. We haven't heard from Crease in a while. See what's going on with Crease Schaefer. Subject line, fun with phones. Did you know that most smartphones have private browsing features? You should use it next time. Well, here's the deal, man. Her exact words were, let me see your phone. I would like to show you a funny clip on YouTube. Now, on my phone's home screen, there is clearly a YouTube app. And she can't play dumb because... she has the exact same phone that I do, so I don't know why she would go straight to the browser. Unless she's... I wonder if she was actually looking for porn. I wonder if she said, hey, let me check out this guy's phone. I want to see what he's beating off to. All she had to do was ask. I would have told her. It's MILF porn. I did fall victim to this embarrassment. A friend of mine and I were wondering how cunt got to be such an offensive word, so I decided to wiki it. Turns out I had been browsing kink.com the night before and forgotten to switch tabs. Yeah, I've been to kink.com. Only go there when I'm in one of my weird moods, though. You know what I mean? not your conventional MILF porn website there on the kink. A lot of chicks being tied into weird knots and weird apparatuses being affixed and things of that nature. Was a good laugh to not get to the bottom of cunt, which is what he said. That's a very interesting question, though, Kreese. Because if you think about it, Kreese and I are here on the West Coast. She's in Washington. I'm in Reno, Nevada. Out here, it's very offensive. You know, you drop a C-bomb on somebody, you probably get slapped. East Coast, it's more almost a term of endearment. You know what I mean? Yeah, that guy's a good cunt over there, you know? So I don't know. And over in like the UK, they use it like we use shit. So I don't know, man. I don't know why it's so offensive over here, but not over there. I'm trying to bring it back personally. I'm going to start dropping more C-bombs. That's my New Year's resolution. Probably get slapped a lot, but I'm prepared to take that risk. Probably was going to get slapped anyway, so there's that. What do we got next here? Kreese coming in again. Subject line. A streak would have been weird anyway. By that I mean Come Out and Play was dumb. Slow and dumb. You didn't like Come Out and Play? I loved it. Main thing, infants are not that sentient, though the scene where the woman died was accidentally hilarious as a result. It was also nice to see a foreign movie, because no way those were legal to film in the U.S. with all the child murdering. Would be a good riff tracks, not a good movie to watch with full attention. The taking of Deborah Logan was fantastic. Great pace, good atmosphere, the right amount of scares and emotion. Did not care for the PSBS with the little girl, but everything else would be pure gold. What is PS? I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about there, Kreese. I think the bits of caring for an Alzheimer's patient was fair and accurate, admittedly hard to watch. This was a fantastic assignment. Try to find more gold like it. I, for one, liked Come Out and Play. I thought it was kick-ass, but we'll get into that in immersion therapy. Sorry you didn't like it there, Kreese. Kreese, coming in again, subject line, sad votes in the Terror Dome. No matter how I look at it, I cannot logically vote for Werewolf Pack over the Cenobites, but I can vote for Wolfman over Frankenstein's monster. He can be ripped limb from limb by the seams and utterly destroyed. Vote goes to Cenobites and Wolfman. Two more for the Bites. Two more for the Wolfman. Righteous. Jesse, you're in trouble here, my friend. All right, that was it for the emails. Let's check the old voicemail mental health hotline, shall we? Looks like we got the usual suspects up this week. I believe this is probably Alan. Did I mention that I did Alan's show, Horacopia, last night? Had a pretty good time with them. Actually had to record the show twice. Why? Technical difficulties. It happens. See what Alan has to say here.
Hey, it's GP.
Oh, it's GP. Never mind.
I didn't participate in immersion therapy. I've been getting my Jason on. I've been watching the
I noticed that.
Entire Friday the 13th series.
Rock and roll.
Well, I still got to watch it, but I'm going to watch the remake and the His Name Was Jason documentary. So
right,
I was kind of like busy with that kind of stuff. But it's more fun.
I agree.
Terror Dome.
We got
Frankenstein versus the Wolfman, the classic battle. I'm going to go with the Wolfman because...
Ah, shit.
I hear your argument with the Frankenstein being undead, but he's like, he's a reanimated corpse. It's not like he was a zombie brought back to life, like some sort of virus or supernatural means.
All right.
Basically, he was hooked up to a homemade battery.
Right.
Give it a jump start. So he can be killed, and
okay.
Wolfman will just go, you know, Wolfman is just a ferocious beast. It's just like start ripping into him. And I'm pretty sure he can rip the head, Frankenstein's head off. Game over.
Okay.
As for teams, Wolfpack versus Cenobites, I will also go with the Wolfpack. That's why.
Same reason?
Because the Cenobites, even though they are from the Hell Dimension and all that, and even though they're mutilated, you know, beyond belief, they still can go down pretty easy. I mean, he can slit their throat. Like,
well, you got to hit them with that laser first, though.
They're pretty normal to kill, as far as I can tell.
Okay.
They do have an advantage with the... Some of them have projectiles, you know, depending on what kind they are, they have projectile weapons. They can, shoot fucking CDs out of their heads or something like that.
Oh, that's dumb, though. You shoot a CD at them.
Could shoot chains with hooks on them.
Yeah.
But I think sheer numbers of the wolf pack can overwhelm, you know, they can take a hit, and they can, like, as long as they get within a claw reach of their face or their neck or whatever, I'm pretty sure they can take cinema down, so that's it.
I'll buy that.
So, Wolfpack, double down. Wolfman and Wolfpack.
We're
in there, man. That's it. I'm done. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Beautiful. Thanks for calling in, GP. He brings up a good point about the Friday the 13th, man. What are you looking at there? 13 movies in total? If you count Freddy vs. Jason and the documentary. That's a good week's worth of work, right? Jesus Christ, man. You're pushing the limits of modern sanity there, GP. I love it. See who's up next. Well, if that was GP, this must be Alan. See what he has to say. Probably more leprechaun antics, I'm sure.
Padded room, what's up? First of all, dude, thank you so much for being on Horrorcopia.
Hey, I had a good time.
It was a blast having you on, dude. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Second, I want to thank all my little homies, minions, whatever. GP, Crackhouse, Gersh,
this motherfucker.
Jesse. Let's see. I'm trying to think.
All the people that you bribed.
You blame the head, not the heart. Thank you for voting leprechaun.
You fucking assholes.
You were right. We smelled a rat.
I knew it.
You know. However the Terror Dome goes, it's fine. This is really the only time I'll campaign for anybody. Thought it would be funny to see Leprechaun win.
Well, you succeeded, you son of a bitch.
Terror Dome picks.
What you got?
Let's go with Frankenstein.
All right.
And the Cenobites. And LeVar Burton should get killed somewhere in there just for the hell of it. I remember that. See if anybody else does. Public Domain month, I enjoyed it.
I'm glad somebody did.
Sorry you didn't find more, like, hidden gems or whatever, although some of the stuff you didn't seem like you was too mad at.
Yeah.
You know, if you should make it a regular thing or not. But it might be cool to, you know, pull one out of the vault every now and then.
Yeah, I could do that.
And that's all I got.
Beautiful.
Y'all have a good one. Bye.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Alan. Yeah, tune into this week's Horrorcopia if you want to hear me get berated by Onyx Hades. Before we get done with the listener mail here, kids, I got one more thing. Old Jason H. stopped by the other day and dropped off his votes. He went Cenobites and the Wolf Man. So your votes are locked in there, Jason, and counted as well. Let me check the tweet line real quick before we move on. Tweeter tweets, tweety tweet twerts. Nothing new here. Beautiful. All right, kids, let's get into a movie, shall we?
People shouldn't hurt animals, should they?
No, they shouldn't.
Animals shouldn't hurt people either.
Well, that's kind of different.
Say goodbye properly.
Will she be normal?
Her heart will beat, her breath will breathe, and she'll remember the time she had with you.
But it's not so simple, is it?
The ritual of the return binds you to Wakewood.
Oh, my baby. Oh, my baby.
Is this for real?
Alice, are you a normal little girl?
Why don't you look at me?
She's not right. We must put Alice back in the ground where she belongs.
Do it now. She's fine. She's our little girl.
You have to obey the rules, Patrick. There's something amiss.
Don't look at her.
Look away! Look away! Look away!
What the hell have we done?
Back to the trees and lie among the roots. Back to the trees and lie among the roots!
You were going to leave me.
I was scared.
Are you still scared? Dad, am I dead?
Yeah, we're talking about Wakewood from 2011. Starring Aidan Gillen, Eva... Berthisol, I'm going to say, and Timothy Spall. You may recognize Timothy Spall, ladies and gentlemen. He was the Beatle in Sweeney Todd. Very, very distinct-looking gentleman, I'd say. You know what I mean? He's just a dude that you recognize. I'm not saying he's unattractive or anything, but he's not anybody that I would want to be around. he's fine. He's a, you just recognize him because he's, you know, Timothy Spall, and that's who he is. Pretty good show here. This one's directed by David Keating and written by Brendan McCarthy. It's rated R. Now, here's a little fun fact for you. This one, in my opinion, and you may differ, but I think this one kind of reinvigorated, dare I say, even resurrected Hammer Film Studios. Now, we all know Hammer Films from the early 60s and 70s with all the Dracula, Christopher Reed crap. Pretty good. Well, some stuff good, some not so good. Kind of fell off there in the 80s and 90s. Now it's back, and it's brought us some fairly recent shows, some pretty good ones, too. Wakewood, of course, is one of them. Let Me In, the Americanization of Let the Right One In, or I guess Eurozation. I don't know. The Woman in Black, the upcoming sequel to The Woman in Black. Pretty good stuff coming out of Hammer Studios. So this one was the first of the most recents. Another name you might recognize is Aidan Gillen. He plays the main character in this film. Took me a minute to figure him out. I knew the face, and I knew the voice. I just couldn't figure out from where, till I looked at his IMDb page and realized that's fucking Lord Baelish from Game of Thrones. Littlefinger, conniving cocksucker. He's not a conniver in this one, though. He's actually a pretty good actor, I'd say, and he does a pretty good job in this one. So our story picks up in a small village, I believe in Ireland, either Ireland, Scotland, or remote English countryside. The name of the village, of course, is Wakewood, the titular, you know what I'm saying, you know what I'm saying. Now, our main characters are of a small family living, I believe, this is kind of confusing to start off with. I'm not sure if they live in Wakewood or just in a bigger city close to Wakewood or what the deal is. But it's obvious that the dad is a veterinarian. Mom is she either owns or works in a pharmacy there in Wakewood, and dad frequently has to go to Wakewood because it's a rural community, and I believe a lot of the economics therein are primarily like livestock and agricultural. Now, they also have a little girl. In the opening of this film, we get a montage of basically just picturesque family life in this small town area. The girl running up and down the street, mom and dad chasing her, you know, laughing, carrying on, and then the montage takes a dark turn. We see the little girl trying to pet a dog, a very large German shepherd, the dog barking furiously at her, letting herself into the yard that the dog is in, and then a lot of screaming and blood and everything else. So we're coming out of this montage believing that the young lady was mauled to death by the German shepherd. That's a motherfucker. Not very graphic with the scene, but enough to where you get the point, the point, you get the point across. You know what I mean? A lot of blood, a lot of parents yelling and freaking out, them trying to rush her to the hospital, follow that up with a funeral procession, and that's pretty much where we're at. So, now, that presumably happened at some point in the not-too-distant past. Cut back to modern day. We get a, you know, just kind of two despondent-looking parents, the same two from the montage. We get to see what I believe is an actual C-section being performed on a cow, which was kind of gnarly. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that was special effects, dude. I think that was the real thing. Basically, what you see is mom and dad driving to Wakewood. Mom goes to the pharmacy. Dad goes to a farm. From there, he injects the cow, and then he basically just slits it open, like, round about the side, like, down by the haunches, and out comes a baby calf. Oh, little graphic there with the cow C-section. You know what I mean? I don't know that that was a special effect or not. If it was, it was very fucking convincing, I'll tell you that. What happens from there is we just kind of get a very brief snapshot of the day-to-day life of this couple post having buried their daughter. They're not really into it anymore, and by it I mean each other or life or anything else. Just kind of slugging through the day-to-day grind. She goes to the pharmacy. He goes out to the various house calls that he has to do. They go home. There's one point where they get into a rather heated argument about removing the little girl's things from the house. The wife isn't ready to do that. The father believes that he has to in order to move on, which is probably accurate. Either way, man, it's not a pretty picture. I can tell you that, having recently become a father myself, if anything happened to my son, especially violent and gross like that, I don't know how I'd take it. You know, I might go catatonic on you, be honest with you. I don't know. From there, I mean, this is pretty much their routine, and we get a couple of days worth of this. They go back on one particular occasion. They're driving from Wakewood back to wherever they live, and their car dies. Kind of, like I said, it's a rural area, and they do some trekking through the woods to try to find help. They make it back to the mayor's house. Now, the mayor of Wakewood is played by Timothy Spall. A bit on the eccentric side, a lot of, you know, not necessarily ominous, but just kind of always hanging around and leering at people. They cut through the woods to what would be the mayor's house, and what they come across is a very bizarro barbecue-looking situation. What you have is the mayor's backyard, some kind of a spit fire going, and something being roasted on the fire. Now, what it is that's being roasted isn't really discernible, and all this is happening from the wife's POV. The husband doesn't see any of this. What she notices is something being roasted on the spit fire. Pretty much the whole town is there at this barbecue. Just before she's discovered, she notices that whatever this thing on the fire is, they kind of crack it open as if it were a giant egg, and they pull a naked guy out of it. Kind of like they were roasting him a little bit, I'd say. I don't know, man. It's very... Later on, she compares it to a birth, and I could see that, because this dude's naked, and he's covered in goop, and he's basically being pulled out of this cocoon-like apparatus. Very wacky. Not something I'd want anything to do with, that's for sure. She makes it back to the husband. They basically walk home, and from there, they get their car the next day. But when they get to the house, the mayor, who was kind of the ringleader of this weird barbecue situation, is already there waiting for him. He just let himself in, and they're like, hey, what are you doing? You can't just be hanging out in our living room. And he's like, oh, you know, this is how we do it in the country. I guess things are different in the city, but whatever. Basically, what the mayor says is he kind of checks up on him, and I think he was kind of feeling out the wife to find out exactly what she saw and what may her interpretation may have been of what she saw. From there, he makes them kind of a peculiar offer. the basic lifeblood of Wakewood is their agriculture, and they need some. They need a veterinarian there, pretty much on, you know, on an on-call basis. Now, when they call this dude previously, maybe he can make it, maybe he can't, maybe he has to schedule something later in the week, so on and so forth. So basically, what he asked them to do is to move into Wakewood. They're not quite ready for that. They're still grieving the loss of the daughter. While the change theoretically probably would do them some good, just, you know, the wife and the house and all kinds of shit, she's kind of thinking it over. A couple of days go by, the veterinarian gets called back to Wakewood again. This time, apparently there was some kind of an issue with a cow. Not the same cow. This one's a bull, and it's been real ornery, or there's something wrong with it. Now, what they do with this cow, and this is where shit gets a little fucked up, they have to corral it into a stable, and then from there, they want to inject it with a sedative, and then he can find out what the problem is. So they're trying to corral it into this, like, this stable-esque corridor. Somebody, they get it to move forward, and then one of the villagers hops in behind it and just kind of like starts whipping, not necessarily whipping it, but just kind of swatting at it, trying to get it to move forward. The cow decides he's had enough of that fucking guy and backs right into him, and then basically crushing him against the stable door. They can't get the door open in time to save the dude, so it basically just smashes him. Once they finally do get the door open, the bull backs all the way out and tramples him. Needless to say, this dude's fucking dead, right? He's been backed over by a bull. That's no good, man. It looked very painful, and I don't have any interest in doing that. I can tell you that right now. So that's fucked up. We find out that the gentleman that died, the villager, was husband to one of the elderly ladies in town. Kind of like one of the elders of the village, I guess you could say. Very tragic. Very not a good way to die at all. From there, the veterinarian kind of makes the pseudo-announcement to the mayor that, you know, he doesn't really want to be in Wakewood anymore. They're thinking about moving to a different part of the city or something like that. And then the mayor makes the promise, and this is where things start getting fucked up, that if they stay in Wakewood, he can bring their daughter back from the dead for a short while. That's kind of fucking creepy, right? But given their present mental state, state of their relationship, and the general grief-stricken nature of these two, they can't. That's an opportunity that they can't just walk away from. I don't know that I could either. So they kind of hem and haw over it for a little while. As this you know period is going by, we see the dude that got pulled out of the weird barbecue thing walking around with an attractive blonde young lady. So that's kind of weird. And he seems to be doing just fine. The mayor meets with him a few more times as that's going down. Basically kind of gives him like a brief overview of what he can do. Now, he asks them how long that their daughter has been dead, because if she's been dead less than a year, then he can bring her back. If it's been more than a year, probably not. The husband says, yeah, she's been dead 11 months, 2 weeks, and 2 days, or something like that. The mayor asks for, you know, there's certain things that he has to do if he's going to do this. He explains to them that while she has returned, she cannot leave the town of Wakewood, number one. Number two, she's only coming back for 3 days. At the end of 3 days, she has to go back in the ground. Number three, they have to find a relic, something that's personal to her. And they need part of her, like part of her body. So that's pretty gnarly. Needless to say, the veterinarian and the pharmacist decide to go ahead and go through with this. I personally have seen enough horror movies to see where this is going. And even if this opportunity did come upon me, I don't think I'd take it. Two reasons. Number one, it's not going to end well. It can't. I mean, you're defying the laws of nature and religion and all kinds of physical things, so you don't want to do that. Number two, I think it would actually be harder on the family to bring her back. You know what I mean? It's one thing for her to die accidentally the way she did. It's another thing for them to say, okay, we've got you, but only for this long. How much fun are you going to have in that 3 days, knowing that that 3 days is going to end and you're going to go right back to where you were? Not a whole lot, if you ask me, man. I could be wrong about that, but I don't know. Regardless, they agree to do it. They have to actually dig her body up and get the necklace that she was buried with, and they cut one of her fingers off also because they need a piece of her flesh. Second thing they need is another dead body, a fresh dead body. So they go talk to the guy that got crushed by the cow. They talk to his wife. She has to agree to do this. She can't, I mean, if she says no, then it's no good. They go and they talk to her. She's not into it at first, but the mayor talks her into it because they need a veterinarian. She reluctantly agrees, giving up the dead body of her husband. That's pretty much all they need for this ritual. They call it the ritual of the returning. So the big night comes around where the mayor has his barbecue, and this is where we're going to do the ritual. Now, this ritual is pretty fucking gnarly, dude. What happens is they bring in the dead body of the lady's husband. They've got it like on a forklift, and it's hanging upside down, and they're not treating it with much respect, to be honest with you. But they come wheeling it in, and then we get the procedure of the ritual. And now this whole scene is pretty fucking gnarly, if you ask me. First thing they have to do is crush the thorax of the dead body. So they do that with a hydraulic press. The mayor explains that in days gone by, they used to use a lump hammer to do it, which is actually even worse, if you ask me. The dead body's hanging upside down. They crush it with the press. All just fluids start pouring out of its orifices. It's fucking gross. From there, they have to sever the spinal cord. To do that, they use the mayor actually does it himself. He uses like a hammer and a chisel and kind of slashes his back open and fucks him all up. From there, they lay the dead body down like on a kind of like a wheelbarrow type of thing. And all the villagers just start packing mud onto him. Before they do that, though, they take the finger and the necklace of the little girl and stick it in the dead body's mouth. Once they have him fully packed with mud, they take him over to the fire where the mud starts to harden into clay or whatever. I don't know. From there, the mayor kind of leads like a chant of the villagers where they're calling to the little girl. Her name's Alice. And he's going on about the trees and the roots. And he's doing like a magic kind of a thing. Although the process of this is very biological. So I think that kind of lends to the gnarliness of it. Because at first it's very procedural with the crushing of the thorax and the preparation of the dead body. But then we break right into this weird chanting and this Celtic crap. So I think that kind of makes it even creepier. They go on with the chanting, and then they put the body on the fire there. The mud hardens. Once it hardens to a pretty good state, the mayor puts his hand on it, and then he's like, okay, we all need to start calling for Alice. So the whole village, including the veterinarian and his wife, start screaming Alice's name. And then he cracks it open, and out comes the little girl, and she's covered in goo. It's gross. Mom and dad are very happy. They have their little girl back. She comes back. She basically says that she doesn't remember anything. They're now living in a house there in Wakewood, and she finds the new house a little weird. But, you know, it's for all intents and purposes there. It's looking pretty good, you know, for a minute. They take her. They put her to bed. They wake up the next day. And we get another montage of basically just happy family stuff. Them playing in the yard. You know, hide and seek, and then going on a picnic, and basically doing whatever the little girl wants. Very, very touching. The only thing that's a little off about this first day is at one point, while they're playing in the woods, she comes across a dead bird, and she's kind of just awestruck by it. A little weird, you know, for a girl her age. She's probably 8, 9 years old. She's just fascinated with this dead bird. A little creepy, but whatever. Take her back to the house, you know, have a nice dinner, put her to bed. But parents sleep in the little girl's room because they don't want to miss a minute of this. It's understandable. The next day they wake up and they've got some more plans for that day. So that's kind of neat. First thing that happens is the wife of the dead guy shows up first thing in the morning. And she's like, hey, I've got a horse that needs a good exercise. Maybe Alice should come and ride the pony. Now, Alice overhears this, and of course, she's all about riding ponies, as most little girls are, I'm sure. So she's screaming and jumping up and down. She wants to ride the pony. Parents aren't really into it. And to be honest with you, there was a little bit of a creepy vibe that came from the old lady. Very weird. Very insistent on getting Alice over to her farm. So that's no good. They reluctantly agree because Alice is throwing a shit fit about riding the pony. So they take her over there and they ride the pony. And at some point during this pony ride, Alice gets off and starts petting the horse. The old lady's, one of her farm hands, kind of leads the parents away so that the old lady is left alone with Alice. The old lady starts asking her questions, and there's something very weird that happens in this movie with abacuses. Abaci. You know what abacus is? It's one of those bead thingies that they used to use to do math. You know what I'm saying? A lot of those floating around. And a lot of, people asking questions and moving beads back and forth on the abacus as if they're calculating something or calibrating something. I don't know. Anyway, the old lady gets Alice alone and she starts asking her weird questions. Like, when you close your eyes, do you see yellow or brown? That's weird, right? I mean, I don't know how that works. What is your correct date of birth? Are you a good girl or a bad girl? Blah, 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 blah. And as she's asking these questions, she's moving beads around on the abacus. Kind of weird. From there, we get a shot of the family driving back to their house from the old lady's house. And on their way back, they accidentally hit a dog. Big dog. Looks like a mastiff or something like that. That sucks, but the good news is that the dad is a veterinarian, so he knows how to handle it. He says, well, why don't we just take the dog with us? We'll stitch him up back at the house. He'll be good as new. Very cool. So they bring the dog back. They stitch him up. He's actually doing okay. Alice convinces the parents, of course, to keep the dog, so that's cool. From there, we just get, like, some weird, creepy things happening throughout the night. Most notably, before her parents wake up the following morning, she does this weird thing where she gets a garbage bag and puts one of her dolls in it. Then she cuts a hole in the garbage bag and pulls her doll through it head first, similar to the process of which she returned to life. You know, so she may be letting on like she knows more than she actually does. From there, the following morning, we have, now this would be day two, we have a situation where Alice is outside playing with the dog. Mrs. Connolly, the next door neighbor, comes over again, and she's basically explaining that there's something not right with the girl, and they need to put her in the ground a little bit sooner than they wanted to. Now, this is kind of weirding the parents out. Now, part of the agreement, as we mentioned before, is that they get their daughter for 3 days. Within those 3 days, they cannot leave Wakewood. And for some reason, if they agree to this, they are bound to Wakewood. They can leave, but they have to come back. They basically have to become one of the townies there. That's pretty nutty. We don't really... There's, other than, you know, Alice going through some very creepy spells, there's really nothing outwardly menacing about her at this point. There's really nothing, I mean, other than perhaps the old lady being bitter about her husband being used in the ritual, there's really no reason for her to, be hostile, I don't feel, at this point. So that's kind of weird. At this point, we are on day two. Mom goes into the pharmacy. She has a weird exchange with one of the other townies. Basically, this older lady comes in and she brings her something called the clutch. And it's very weird. It's basically a stick with a rope attached to it that comes out the other end into two loops. Basically, what she explains is that when it's time for Alice to go back into the ground, to put that on her, it'll comfort her, and if she gets surly, all she has to do is pull the clutch and it'll tighten her hands up to her chest, kind of restraining her in a way. All right, that's weird. I mean, I don't understand how that would comfort her exactly, but it's kind of nutty. From there, we're still in day two. Things are getting a little more malicious with Alice. Weird kind of, you know, making weird announcements like asking her dad if she's dead. Where has she been the last couple of weeks? She doesn't remember anything. Now, according to the mayor, she isn't supposed to be like this at all. She's supposed to be just happy as she was and not know or care about anything about her being dead or any of that shit. So mom and dad are starting to get a little suspicious. It's nutty, right? I don't know. I don't know about this shit. But still nothing outwardly menacing about Alice. Day two comes and goes. Now, on the night of day two, the old lady from down the road has worked the mayor and the rest of the townies up into a full-on frenzy. They're putting Alice to bed that night. Basically, the townies kind of let themselves into their house, which is creepy, and they're all downstairs banging sticks together, which, again, I guess is some kind of a Wiccan thing or a Celtic thing. I don't know how that works. Dad goes down there, and the mayor explains that they have reason to believe that Alice may have gone bad, which is, I don't know what that even means. Did she come with an expiration date? Perhaps, I don't know. Basically, the old lady's there, and she's like, that kid's gone bad, you gotta put her back in the ground, dude. And Dad's like, whoa, 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 this is only day two, we've got one more day left, you fuckers. And they're like, well, yeah, but still, I mean, if the kid's gone bad, it's going to end up hurting everybody. So you just got to keep an eye. The mayor kind of talks everybody down a little bit. And he's like, okay, well, we're going to give you your last day, but you got to keep a real strict eye on her. And if anything weird is going on with this kid, you got to let us know because we may have to put her in the ground early. I don't know why this old lady thinks she's gone bad, but, you know, the old lady's kind of like one of the town elders too. So we kind of have to act on her behest. They leave peacefully. Unfortunately, Alice does overhear a lot of this conversation, so that's no good. Mom and Dad get Alice back to bed, then they go back to bed themselves. At this point, we have a very tough situation on our hands because, obviously, they don't want to give Alice up. So the idea, I think, is that they are going to leave Wakewood the following morning, which... probably not the best idea. I mean, considering you kind of have a dead girl on your hands, but you don't want to give her up either, so I don't know what else you do. They wake up the following morning. They start driving out of Wakewood with Alice. Their car dies before they get out of Wakewood. Alice takes off on foot, and she's hauling ass through the woods. Mom and Dad are chasing her, just trying to keep her from getting lost. She actually... crosses the town line there in Wakewood. As soon as she does, all of her dog mauling wounds just open right back up, and she basically bleeds out on the spot. Oh, fuck me. Okay, now we know why we can't leave Wakewood, right? So they haul ass over there, they pick her up, they get her back in the car, and they start hauling ass back towards Wakewood. Once they get across the town line, her wounds heal themselves, and she basically wakes up just fine. Okay, now we get it. Now we understand what's going on. They get back home. They kind of put Alice to bed, let her rest for a little while. It's not too long before the dad wakes up and realizes something is amiss. He goes outside. He realizes that the dog that they were keeping as a pet that he had hit with a vehicle earlier in the movie has been skinned. Not only that, but the skin has been nailed to the door of the house. Fucking, dude, don't be killing dogs. That's no good. If you do, don't fucking skin them, man. That's even worse. Now, at first glance, he's thinking it's probably the villagers doing some more weird magic superstitious crap. But then he goes back in where Alice is still asleep and he looks at her fingertips and they're all bloody and dirty. Alright, now some shit has definitely gone awry here, my friends. He doesn't come out and say it, but it's fairly obvious who killed the dog and what happened thereafter. So, from there, Alice goes out to play, and she's just kind of running around the woods again. Mom and Dad have to have a very, very poignant conversation about, you know... maybe this wasn't the best idea. Fucking kids doing up to no good. Around about that time, the phone rings and Dad has to go to work. He has to go to one of the neighboring farms and deal with a cow situation. He goes to deal with the cow. The cow has been basically ripped open. That's pretty fucking gnarly. The guy that owns the cow thinks it was probably a wolf or a rabid dog or something like that. Dad has a pretty good idea of what's really going on. He thinks probably Alice got in there and jacked up this cow. That's no good either, dude. If you're going to kill a cow, you should probably make burgers out of it or something. I don't know. You can't just be killing cows haphazardly, man. Now, we see the dad, basically the cow is well on its verge of bleeding out. So the dad basically decides to put the poor cow out of its misery. Before he does that, he fills up a syringe full of some kind of a tranquilizer. Given his mental state, we can easily draw the conclusion that that's not meant for the cow, it's meant for Alice. From there, he goes back home, he finds his wife. Alice has been in and out of the house all day, in various states of bloody, dishevelment. From there, it's starting to get dark out a little bit. Alice comes in and she makes the proclamation to her mom that there's a baby coming. Now, earlier in the movie, we had a dialogue between mom and dad that stated that due to complications with Alice's birth, she's no longer able to conceive. Very weird. Now she's pregnant. Don't know how that works. Whatever. Alice is out and about. Dad's getting the idea that this is probably a bad idea and something's got to be done about Alice. From there, we cut to the mayor's house. The mayor's got a couple of friends over, and they're, telling each other stories or whatever you do over there. I don't know. All of a sudden, Alice walks into the living room. It's kind of creepy. Just out of nowhere, lets herself in. As soon as she walks in, the mayor starts telling his friends not to look at her. Don't look at her. Don't make eye contact with her. Naturally, of course, one of them does, and he gets like kind of transfixed by Alice. From there, Alice just picks up a fire poker and shanks the dude right in the neck with it. Fuck me. From there, the lights go out, and the mayor is frantically trying to get some candlelight or something going. As he's doing this, he's repeating this chant about go amongst the trees and lay with the roots or something like that. Kind of trying to keep Alice at bay with some kind of magic or something. Apparently it works, though, because the mayor lives while his two friends get killed by Alice. She goes hauling ass out of there, and now the mayor is fully aware of what's going on. The girl has gone bad, and she needs to get put back in the ground immediately. We find out why in a minute, but still, it's a little girl, even though she is killing people. So he kind of rounds up a lynch mob-esque type of situation, and they go tearing through the town trying to find Alice. Apparently, they overlook the old lady's house, though, because that's the next stop for Alice. She walks into the old lady's house and presents her with two hooves, presumably cut from the horse that she was riding earlier in the weekend. That's no good. You can't be cutting horses' feet off, whatever. You can't be doing that shit, man. It's no good. And then she goes ahead and stabs the old lady with a fucking sewing needle, I think, right through the neck. So the body count is now building up. The lynch mob at this point reaches the family's house, the veterinarian and his wife. They go in there and they kind of abduct the father because they don't want him getting in the way of this. And the mom, though, manages to get free, and she's running through the woods also trying to find Alice. I think the idea is that if she can find Alice before the lynch mob does, she can kind of put her to rest a little bit easier than they might. I don't know what they have planned for her, but whatever. Now the bodies are really starting to stack up, though. You know what I mean? This little girl is running around jacking people left and right. It's now known to everybody that she's gone bad, so we got to find this chick as soon as possible. What happens is, and this is rather ingenious on her part, the mom actually kind of runs afoul of Alice. She, finds her, and then Alice starts chasing the mom. The mom manages to make it outside the town limits to like a weird windmill situation. Once she's out there, she kind of, she starts yelling for Alice to come to her and that she's sorry she ran. She was scared. Alice comes walking towards mom, presumably with ill intentions. And once she crosses that county line, her wounds open up and she bleeds out again. Very cool. It works. From there, we cut back to the mayor's goons who are holding the father captive. The mayor is questioning the father about what the hell's going on. And this is where we get the reveal that maybe Dad wasn't entirely truthful about how long Alice has been dead. He gave the figure 11 months, 2 weeks, and a couple of days. In actuality, it was more like 14 months, a couple weeks, and a couple of days. So she's actually past her expiration date, as they say. That's your reveal. That's why this kid has gone bad. She's been dead too long. Apparently, if they caught her within the first year, everything would have worked out beautifully. Unfortunately, it was not to be. Now we have a bunch of dead bodies on our hands. Shit. Round about this time, the mom is carrying the now unconscious body of Alice back to the village. She comes across the lynch mob there who is holding the father. And she basically, in an emotional breakdown, just kind of collapses into the dirt there and just starts pawing handfuls of dirt on top of Alice, putting her back into the ground, effectively. Very emotional situation there. Once she is completely covered in dirt, they let the father go. He goes to comfort his wife, and they're both kind of laying on the burial mound of Alice, crying and holding each other. Very emotional. From there, the father stands up and is trying to, you know, coax his wife back onto her feet when we get a Carrie-esque moment where a hand comes out of the ground and grabs mom by the ankle and pulls her down into the dirt. Dad is trying feverishly to get mom back up on the right side of the dirt, whereas the townies are pulling Dad away from mom. Needless to say, mom gets submerged into the dirt. Then they let go of Dad, and he's like trying to dig her out, but it's not going to lead anywhere. Now Dad is just laying on the dirt crying. The mayor comes over and he's like, "Sorry, man, I told you there'd be consequences." And that's pretty much what it is. So now Dad, Lord Baelish, is stuck in this town by himself to do all the veterinary work. That's pretty much your movie, but from there we get a jump to a montage. Now, what the montage shows is another ritual of the return taking place in which the wife is actually being pulled out of the weird barbecue thing, and he gets to take her home, and now she's like full-on pregnant. The very last scene of the film is the wife getting out of the shower, and the veterinarian has laid out all of his surgical instruments as if to say he's about to perform a C-section on her. So there's that. That's pretty much your movie. I say it's a good show. It's very comparable to Pet Sematary in many, many, many different ways. I think just on a movie-to-movie basis, I probably like this one better, though. This dude, Aidan Gillen, a much better actor than Dale Midkiff. I'm not saying I didn't like Pet Sematary. I'm just saying if you're putting it up against Wakewood, I'm going to probably take Wakewood on this. Other than that, they're pretty much the same movie. Kid gets killed. Kid comes back, but in a weird kind of way. Starts jacking a bunch of people. Now we got to re-kill the kid, but in doing so, the mom gets killed. But then we bring the mom back. A little bit more of a happy ending in Wakewood than in Pet Sematary. One of the things that stood out to me the most about this movie was that scene in which the ritual is happening. Very cool. The music that was playing, the way they're prepping everything, and the mayor is walking the couple through the steps in which this happens. Very cool. Like that scene a lot. I got a kill count of 6 in total on this. That doesn't include the livestock, of course. What do we got here? The Alice killing spree. Not the horse, not the cow, not the dog. I hate it when animals get killed for no reason in movies. I don't know. I'm kind of softy like that. Why does she have a case of I wrote down, why does she have a case of pregnancy tests? But then I remembered that she owns the pharmacy, so I guess that would make sense. I'll take this over the Micmac graveyard any day. Yeah. One of the differences is that when you bury the kid in the Micmac graveyard, he pretty much comes back full zombie. When you do the ritual of returning, they come back pretty much just the way they were, without any of the zombie crap, you know what I mean? Hey, mind if we snag your husband's corpse? that's a difficult conversation to have, I think. One disgusting barbecue, that was fucking Littlefinger. And I think that was a real C-section on the cow. It's pretty much all I got on Wakewood, man. I like this movie. I think it's pretty kick-ass. I think it is actually better than Pet Sematary, probably. Maybe not the book. I don't know if Wakewood is based on a book or not, but as far as movies to movies go, I'm taking Wakewood on that one. That's all I got on the Wakewood, man. Let's take us a little break, and we'll get right back with some other stuff, huh?
Throw away your cross. Face the master, your faith against his faith. Could you do that? Is your faith enough? Then do it.
Stop, holy man!
And I'm back. Alrighty, kids, I think you know what time it is. We got to find ourselves a Padded Room Podcast Twitter follow of the week. I don't know about you, but I am interested to see if Hammer Films has a Twitter account. I'm willing to bet they do. Let's take a look here. Metal Hammer, MC Hammer, at Hammer Films. Booyah! See what they're up to here. Supernatural Saturday. Frankenstein Created Woman. All right. Pics of Brian Cushing, Frankenstein Created Woman. A lot of Frankenstein Created Woman action going on here. Very cool. Let's take a look at your photos. Brian Cushing, Christopher Lee. Who are you? From The Quiet Ones. Oh, okay. Olivia, somebody. Oh, yeah, they did The Quiet Ones, too, huh? It wasn't a bad show. It wasn't a great show, either, but it was all right. Very cool. Hammer Films, you are the Padded Room Podcast Twitter Follow of the Week. Let's get down to business in the Terror Dome, shall we? Assuming that we have no more shenanigans this week, you sons of bitches. Oh, it's all good. You know what? You wanna petition people to vote your way in the Terror Dome? Go right ahead. I just wish you wouldn't have picked the leprechaun. All right, Terror Dome. First, last week's winners. In singles competition, we had Frankenstein versus the Wolfman. And the story continues. The violence of the mob scene was overwhelming, people trampling each other to flee the monster. The monster itself roaring with anger and smashing everything in its way. From the opposite side of the castle's ballroom, a hulking figure emerges covered in hair. In a flash of ferocity, the two behemoths collide and combat is joined. Claws rend and teeth gnash as Frankenstein's monster is eviscerated and sent back to a peaceful grave. Now the villagers would have something new to fear in the old castle, a howling on every full moon. With a vote of 10-3, the Wolfman has advanced over Frankenstein's monster. Sorry, Jesse. Should have voted, man. In teams action, we had the Cenobites versus the Wolf Pack. And the story continues. Whoop. The fight had been well fought. Hell's decree, however, was infallible. JP opened the box, thus the Cenobites were sent to retrieve him. JP and his werewolf friends turned the boiler room into a bloody battleground and made the Cenobites fight for every inch of territory. But in the end, JP opened the box, and JP would return with them to the labyrinth. With a vote of 11-2, the Cenobites advance over the Wolf Pack. Hey, look at that. I might get to keep some of my stuff this year. Don't count on it, you asshole. Yeah, I know. I know, god damn it. Would be nice, though, wouldn't it? Actually, not really, because I got a lot of crap to get rid of here, so. There you have it. All right, let's get into this week's matchups. We'll start it off in singles competition in the Asylum Conference, round 18. As usual, inmates, bear with me. I'm not a writer. They'd finally found the perfect place. No one, not even the cult of Metatron, would find them here. Heather Mason and her father had been pursued all over the United States and were finally forced to seek refuge internationally. Now they were in paradise. A tropical lagoon along the Amazon River provided the perfect sanctuary. A new life stretched out before them, one where they didn't have to look over their shoulders all the time. Hunting and gathering during the day, trading and visiting local villages by night, for the first time since the loss of her mother, Heather was happy. Then the archaeologists came. Large men with large noisy tools smashing through the jungle and disturbing the peaceful waters of the lagoon. Just before the disappearances started, she heard one of them mention something about an underground cave network. Then the screaming started. One of the workers found dead along the banks, chest cavity torn open and partially devoured. More blood in the water when the lead archaeologist's girlfriend went missing. Whatever was causing this had a a penchant for young ladies, which made Heather very nervous. In singles competition, we have Pyramid Head versus the creature from the Black Lagoon. I, for one, am taking Pyramid Head on this one, dude. I do not find the creature from the Black Lagoon even remotely frightening at all, unless you're a dude that doesn't know how to swim, perhaps. I think Pyramid Head has a reach advantage with that giant sword and an armor advantage with the giant metal pyramid thing. So I'm taking Pyramid Head over the creature from the Black Lagoon. Swing it over to the teams competition. We are in the Asylum Conference round 18 there also. The first meteor impact happened around 11:30 p.m., just northeast of Lover's Lane in the Windy Hill area. Brad and Mandy let their curiosity get the better of them and went to investigate. Brad ventured into the crater to emerge a few moments later with sharp quill-like protrusions opening his carotid artery. He bled out moments later. Mandy ran to the car but was soon swallowed by a tide of small black-furred rodent-like creatures. When the tide broke, all that was left of her was bloody bones and scraps of clothing. The second meteor impact occurred closer to 2 a.m., just south of the old Dilworth farm. When the old man and his dog approached the impact point, what they found was even stranger than the events on Lover's Lane. A large, brightly colored tent sitting in the middle of a cornfield. Moving closer, they were met with disfigured clowns carrying strange weapons. The dog barked as the old man leveled his shotgun, then from the shadows, bright lights and cocoons of cotton candy. From the north, the black tide of critters approached the small town. From the south, the menacing parade of clowns. In teams competition, we have the killer clowns from outer space versus the critters. This is a fucking tough one, man. I don't know how this one plays out, to be honest with you. I think I am going to take the killer clowns from outer space. They got some gnarly weapons. I don't know that the critter quill thingies will affect them. I think those things are poison tipped. Plus you got those popcorn things and the shadow puppets. I'm taking the killer clowns, dude. I just can't think of a way that the critters would win this. So, those are your Terror Dome matchups for the week. In singles, we have Pyramid Head versus the creature from the Black Lagoon. In teams, we have the killer clowns from outer space versus the critters. Or Krites, depending on how much of a hipster you are, I guess. I don't know. Alrighty. As usual, inmates, give me your votes by next week if you can. The Mental Health Hotline is 206-309-9117. Or you can email me at thepaddedroom2011@hotmail.com. Or you can tweet me your votes if you'd like, but you have to follow me first. @paddedroompod is the way to go there. I should also mention that you don't have to vote on these Terror Dome matchups. If you just want to write in and say what's up or tell me what an asshole I am, or send me a picture of your genitalia, feel free to do that also. Yeah, buddy. All right. Those are your Terror Dome matches. Let's get into some what are you looking at, shall we?
What are you looking at?
Alrighty, this week I watched a few movies. How about Mockingbird from 2014? Covered this on Horrorcopia with those yahoos last night. Not a bad show. They weren't fans of it. I wasn't mad at it. Found footage, kind of a home invasion-esque situation. Basically, you have cameras being delivered to three different addresses throughout the city. And then, some culmination of events, a lot of harassment, things of that nature. It's found footage. It's not bad. I say give it a shot. Ouija from 2014. Heard a lot of bad things about this movie, and to be honest with you, I think they were all accurate. Sure, I guess it's a horror movie, but it's not really designed for horror fans. So if you're a casual horror fan or a teenage girl, maybe Ouija would work for you. Not so much for me. The Babadook, also from 2014. You may be wondering how I got access to these movies. To that I say, don't worry about it, huh? Forget about it. The Babadook from 2014. Pretty good show, this one. Very atmospheric. Australian movie. I believe it's by the same guys that brought us Snowtown. Only this is not nearly as disturbing as that one. You basically have a single mom. Her 7-year-old son has some mental issues. And then we introduce a demonic child's book. So there's a lot of psychology involved in this one. You don't know if it's just lack of sleep that's getting to her, or if this book is really, you know, fucking with them, or what the deal is. Pretty good show either way. Evil Dead from 2013. Ran into this one on cable. I've seen it before, kids. I know you have too. If you're like me, then you like the Evil Dead. And if you run into it on cable, then you have to finish it. That's all there is to it. Dracula Untold from 2014. Mentioned this one earlier. I gotta tell you, man, I'm into this action here. This is hopefully the start of the Universal reboot. I dug it. A lot of dickish horror fans out there aren't into it because it's not really a horror movie. Well, like I said, how the fuck are you gonna make Dracula scary? You can't, unless you want to get all hipster and try to do like a Dracula 2000 thing with it, which I wasn't all that into. This one's pretty badass. I think I'm going to go see it in the theater. Again, I didn't see this one in the theater. But don't worry about it, huh? Pretty good stuff, though. Lastly, Botched from 2007. Stephen Dorff plays some kind of a cat burglar who botches a robbery in a Moscow office building where I believe he runs into Ivan the Terrible. More of a horror comedy. Nutty, whatever you want to do with it, man. I don't really care. I take it or leave it, I say, on that one. That's what I'm looking at. How about some immersion therapy, huh?
Immersion therapy.
Yeah, last week we watched Come Out and Play from 2012. I loved it, man. I was into it. Apparently, this is a remake, I wasn't aware of that, of a different movie called Who Can Kill a Child. What I dug about this one was the musical score, mostly, and just the overall creepiness of this being on some kind of a secluded Mexican island and just the dirty, dingy, you know, aspects of it. I dig that. I dig that a lot. On a funny side note, the director of this movie, a guy by the name of Makanov, has put out an internet video basically of him describing that horror needs to be more disturbing and bloody and it's supposed to kick you in the nuts. Funny thing about it, though, he's like out in the woods making these proclamations and he's wearing a Crimson Executioner hood. So I don't know what's going on with Makanov, but pretty good show, I thought. I thought it was good stuff. I will have to check out the original at some point. Your immersion therapy for this week is going to be Comforting Skin from 2011, starring Victoria Bidwell and Ty Runyon, directed by Derek Franson. Something about a killer tattoo. I know, it sounds fucking silly, but other movies that we've watched have sounded silly and turned out to be okay. So give that a shot if you get a chance. Comforting Skin from 2011. Get with me next week and we'll compare notes. That's all I got on immersion therapy. How about some Company of Wolves action?
The Company of Wolves.
Yeah, buddy. Anybody got a sore chest or just me? Did you attempt the challenge? I know I did. I know Mike did. If you want some comedy, check out the Werewolf Athletics Facebook page and watch me and him talk shit to each other throughout the week as we endeavor the 700 push-ups. I got 700. I thought I was going to be funny with it and add impalers in there too, just because why not? You're probably wondering what exactly an impaler is, so allow me to explain. I use a 15-pound steel mace. I know most rational thinking people don't have access to a 15-pound steel mace, and you're probably wondering what the fuck I'm doing with a 15-pound steel mace and why I haven't smashed my foot open with it yet. You can use anything that's awkward, that's pole-like, but awkwardly heavy on one end. Another good example would be like a sledgehammer or a baseball bat or really any kind of two-handed blunt instrument, maybe an axe, I don't know, anything of that general nature. What you're going to do is you're going to stand sideways, shoulder width apart, with your power foot forward, and you're going to hold it as if you were about to impale somebody. Whatever your power hand is forward, supporting the heft of the weapon or the instrument, and then your weak hand kind of balancing it. Then, in one motion, you're going to lunge forward, keeping your rear foot in place, and shove the instrument out in front of you. You know, it'd probably be easier if I demonstrated this. So maybe later on tonight, I'll put a video up on the Werewolf page showing you exactly what an impaler is. Kick the shit out of me, I can tell you that. As if 700 push-ups weren't enough, I think I got 300 impalers in there also. Very good for your core, though, and your upper body. So you might want to look into that. Like I said, you don't have to use a steel mace, but if you have one, you should probably have your head examined. Checked in with the Stepaniacs. Their challenge for this week is going to be 700 bodyweight squats. I'll be doing it. I'm sure multiple mics will also. You can watch us talk shit to each other via memes. They're on the Facebook page. Check that out if you get a chance. And if you feel up to it, go ahead and knock out some bodyweight squats. That's about it for us on the week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again for tuning in. I have to get the fuck out of here or I'm going to be late for that meeting with the Comic-Con guys. But for right now, my friends, I'm afraid visiting hours are over.